Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of October 21st. This week we spoke with Archbishop Robert W. McElroy, who's now auxiliary bishop in the Archdiocese of San Francisco, who has an article in the current edition of America called A Church for the Poor. I spoke to Bishop McElroy by phone.
Well, Bishop McElroy, your article in America called A Church for the Poor raises some very interesting questions, talking about the direction that Pope Francis is pushing us. I'm really interested in this line you have here, where you say that Francis seeks to make us all deeply uncomfortable, but he's doing it in a disarming way. So that combination seems unique to Pope Francis.
I think it absolutely is, because in part the disarming element comes from his own life of simplicity and the symbolic and substantive acts he's taken, both in his own life and how he has exercised leadership as the Pope, to suggest to us his concern about a simplicity of life and a reevaluation of materialism and power in our own lives is central to the Christian call.
What's remarkable is that he's making all sorts of people uncomfortable, and in a way that people don't feel. I think David Brooks said he's done it in a way with a certain amount of grace, so people are hearing the message.
Yes, I think it's a message that's challenging, but it's not alienating. Part of it is the tone, I think, of Pope Francis's message to us, and part of it is the manner in which he carries out the gospel and the way, particularly in that interview in America, the way in which he applies the same principles he's applying and challenging the whole world and especially the Catholic community with. He's applying those to his own life and is specific about how he does that. I think that's very moving, and that communicates powerfully that call is one all of us have to integrate into our lives. I've been doing a lot of work in the last year and a half with young adults in the Archdiocese of San Francisco, and we've been developing a pastoral plan. And I have found their reactions just magnificently open and being moved by this Pope. And I think that's going to be a series of bridges that spring on the affective and deeply spiritual level that will help, especially with groups who haven't been so open to participation in the life of the Church and the message of the Church.
Now, Pope Francis' message on the poor, he said a lot about reaching out. Maybe you can speak just in general about what he's urging us to do.
I really think he's urging us to see the poor with the eyes of Christ and to not engage in the distancing which we naturally do in our lives and our existence, because there is poverty all around us, even in the United States, in the lives that we live. We encounter poverty in the lives of those who are homeless, those who are suffering isolation and marginalization in society. And we naturally distance ourselves emotionally in order to insulate ourselves from having to feel the depth of that sadness and commiseration. And I think that what this Pope is telling us to do is we've got to stop that process of distancing and really look at the face of the poor and the existence of the poor and the specific lives of the poor, the individuals who stand before us, and encounter them with the eyes of Christ.
Now, when we're talking about what we can do for the poor, we're also talking about what governments can do, what nations can do, and you write about the United States seems to have a special responsibility here.
Yes, I believe that the United States has a special responsibility because of its unique role as the leader in the world economy. Now, that doesn't mean the responsibility falls even primarily on the United States. It really falls upon the United States, Europe, Japan, and increasingly countries like China to participate in the efforts to create structures in the international trading system, finance system, which really do help poor countries very tangible ways so that their industries can get off the ground, so that their economies aren't decimated by competition from wealthy nations as they are now. Also, just it is an elementary reality that out of our great wealth, even though we as an economy in the United States and in much of the rich world now are encountering difficulties in our economy, still out of, if we set aside just the smallest part, 0.7% of our GDP to help the poorest nations of the world, we really could go a tremendous way toward alleviating dire poverty in the world and eliminating it. There are some exceptions in countries where the corruption prevents even good-willed money from coming in and doing the good it can, but in the great bulk of the countries of the world which are desperately poor, if we kept to our commitment, the United States, Europe, Japan, the other wealthy nations, had kept to their commitment of giving that 0.7%, which we made in Mexico in 2002, then we really would be providing the money necessary to end the devastation of malnutrition, of bad water, of malaria still, although great progress has been made on that, that take millions of children's lives every year and the lives of millions of adults too.
Now, we're talking about the United States and the government's role, but you're also writing about here about the church in the United States and what the message it sends and how he can perhaps push the government towards fighting poverty. So maybe you can speak about the priorities of the church in terms of poverty.
Yes, I think poverty has to be elevated in its role in the current Catholic political conversation in the United States. I think it has been given a second-tier status in recent years, and I think that is not in keeping with the message of the gospel. It's certainly not in keeping with the message that Pope Francis is giving us. And I think the two issues that are of paramount importance in our own nation at the present time in terms of what government must be doing and the Catholic community should be focusing intently upon, those two issues are abortion and poverty, particularly global poverty.
And you mentioned, you give us some theological categories here, structural sin versus intrinsic evil. Maybe you can briefly introduce the differences there.
Intrinsically evil acts are actions which in themselves are always wrong, regardless of the circumstances or intentions that surround them. Abortion would be an example, murder is an example, euthanasia, genocide, torture. Those things in Catholic moral theology are always and everywhere wrong. Some acts of intrinsic evil, particularly abortion and euthanasia, fall within the governance of law by their very nature. That is, any government has to decide that it's going to protect human life, and thus the responsibility of government to provide in law for the protection of the unborn or for those who may be victimized by euthanasia is central to what law is. And thus, much of the Catholic political conversation should be devoted to these questions that fall within the category of intrinsic evil. That is, they're always and everywhere wrong as actions, and they fall within the provenance of government. At the same time, there are many evils in the world which are not, don't fall under the technical theological category of intrinsic evil, but are grave evils. For example, war exists in the world. That's a grave evil that it exists. It's a structural evil. It arises from human selfishness, human actions, human desires for power, and so is poverty. It results largely from those same things, from materialism, results from an unwillingness to see the goods of creation as ultimately gifts from God, and thus to accord the just claim that every man and woman and child has to a share of the fruits of the created order. And these evils, which are not intrinsically evil because they're not specific actions, they're rather the result of a series of actions of people and nations which result in the terrible situation that people go to kill each other. Similarly, poverty, it doesn't arise from specific actions. Thus, they're not intrinsically evil, war or poverty, but they are gravely evil. They're social evil. They're rooted in the very structures of our societies that our humanity has built up. And for this reason, those structures are themselves tinged by evil. And much of the pursuit of the common good by government has to speak to those questions of social sin and structural evil, just as much of it has to speak to questions of intrinsic evil. In recent years in the American Catholic political conversation, it has become commonplace to say that actions of intrinsic evil automatically have a priority. That is, they come first in the weighing of how one understands political choices or election choices, voting choices. And I don't believe that's true. I think the common good calls us in the United States to look on issues and see that many of the grave evils that face us concern questions of intrinsic evil, many concern questions of structural evil, and many concern not questions of evil, but the pursuit of the good. For example, Pope John Paul II spoke eloquently and repeatedly of what social solidarity meant, that vision of the nation, for example, the United States, being truly a community with a unity founded on respecting the dignity of every person and our common humanity, rooted powerfully in our common humanity. So the Catholic political conversation and the goals of the Catholic community, and I'm speaking here primarily of the Catholic laity in the United States, because they are the actors in the arena of politics. The church is only very secondarily an actor in the political arena. The church doesn't have any specifically political mission in the public order. It has only a moral mission with some political implications to it. So the role of the Catholic community, particularly the lay community, is to understand the integration of these various types of issues, intrinsic evil, issues of structural evil, and issues of pursuing the good, all as important elements of what our vision is for our society and our nation.
Now, you mentioned earlier abortion and poverty. Maybe you can speak a little more about how those two issues are connected, or what the similarities are in the way we approach them.
I believe that abortion and poverty are the two preeminent issues touching upon matters of government in the Catholic vision of the United States today. We live in a nation where a million unborn children a year, more or less, are directly killed. And we live in a nation where, through the deliberate reneging of our government on important commitments it has made for the service of the poor in the world, millions of children are dying as a result of those actions and refusal of our government to carry out the responsibilities which they accepted some years ago. So it is because these evils are so grave and are actually taking place in our society now that I think those two issues stand in Catholic thinking as the two preeminent issues for Catholics to seek redress on in our society at the present moment. I think they're co-equal, their stature.
And you write on also the role of prudence in evaluating these two issues, and you say that the role of prudence has been one of the most misused elements in the Catholic political conversation. Maybe you can talk about that.
Prudence in Catholic moral theology is called the charioteer of the virtue. That is, in a sense, the one virtue which is used to balance all of the virtues together. It has a very important role in Catholic theology. And so prudence is necessary in any effort to take a Catholic moral principle and to translate that principle into what should law say or what should government do. It's essential. Prudence is necessary there. It's almost never possible to move directly in thought from a principle of Catholic moral theology to its realization of the world. Prudence is necessary. Prudence is necessary in leading Catholic men and women to understand what are the objectives we seek and what's the best way to get there. Is it best to have a law which puts a criminal penalty on the mother for having abortion? It's best to have a law which puts it on the abortion provider. Criminal penalty, is it best to have non-criminal sanctions for law? Is it best to move gradually toward the realization of the Catholic vision of law protecting the unborn through parental notification laws? These are all questions that prudence has to inform. But all of these avenues are meant to lead our society and our government to the point where law protects the unborn, which is the core of Catholic teaching on this question of the relationship of law and abortion. It is that law should protect unborn children. And so, but the prudence says, what is the best way to get there? How is it, in fact, realized in specific enactments and legislation? Someone who says they're against abortion but then rejects any efforts to enshrine that in law, it's a prohibited law, to me has abandoned the core of the Catholic teaching on abortion and law, because it really is the very center of a nation's obligation in law to define what life is protected by that government. And in the Catholic understanding, it is, of course, to define it in a way which embraces the unborn. Now, on the issue of poverty, Catholic teaching says that government must have a threshold of rights and support systems for those who are encountering terrible economic circumstances in their lives within the society. So that's the core teaching. How that gets enfleshed, you know, what the specific amounts of money are, how it's paid, what the programs are, prudence helps realize how you do that, and prudence can lead people to have different opinions on how you realize that goal. But the goal was clear. Government must provide a threshold for a decent standard of living, for housing, for medical care, for food, for basic human necessities in society. And thus, any citizen or political leader who says, I'm going to vote to diminish that network of supports, or I'm going to vote to diminish the already small level of official development assistance for the poor nations of the world, is going contrary to the goal of Catholic moral theology.
Now, I wonder what the next steps are here. We have Pope Francis, you know, pushing us to focus more on poverty, and you're calling for a special focus here in the United States, within the government, within the church. How does the conversation go from here?
I think the challenge for American Catholics really comes down to a question of the structure and positions of our political parties at the present moment. Because the political parties actually bisect the Catholic moral teaching on what government should do. That is, the Democratic platform and basically Democratic candidates and officials endorse Catholic teaching in the main on issues like poverty and war and peace, death penalty, but immigration would be a very important one. But they deny Catholic teaching and the implications of Catholic teaching in society in issues like abortion, often religious liberty, marriage, sometimes euthanasia. Meanwhile, the Republican platforms and in the main candidates and public officials more strongly pursue and support Catholic teaching on issues like abortion, euthanasia, religious liberty, but they don't support as vigorously at all Catholic teaching in the main on poverty, immigration, death penalty, those sorts of issues. So the citizen is left in an enormously difficult position. The citizen who wants to pursue Catholic teaching through as a voter, as a citizen and believer, finds himself or herself in a very difficult position. They're torn because there aren't candidates out there in the main who are electable who endorse even the broad range of Catholic understanding of what government should be doing. And thus, I think in a very real sense, Catholics in the United States exist as citizens without a party. That is, for a believer
people understand the broad range of Catholic social teaching, there is no political party which even substantially enfleshes the Catholic vision of what government should be doing at the present time in the United States. That doesn't mean that the Catholics shouldn't be involved in their political parties or should not use them, their involvement as a way of advancing the common good, but it means that Catholics who are in either the Republican or the Democratic Party have to exercise in their role as members of the party or participants of the party, I think, an identity of being radical insurgents on certain issues and must seek to change where their party stands on those core issues where either in the Democratic Party or the Republican Party they diverge fundamentally from the most central moral imperatives that the Church is placing forward as part of the Catholic vision.
Well, Bishop Robert McElroy of the Archdiocese of San Francisco, we want to thank you very much for joining us for this conversation.
Sure, not at all.